The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
A Russian court will hear an appeal on the detention of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. Plus, the U.S. Supreme Court rejects West Virginia's attempt to ban a transgender girl from her school's girls track team. And why U.S. utilities are considering sales of their natural gas pipeline networks.
There's been a number of efforts, starting with some local efforts among cities and towns across the country, and also some state-level efforts as well, to really begin to accelerate the push to electrify functions in your home that are maybe powered by gas.
It's Thursday, April 6th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. A Moscow court said today that it would hear an appeal on April 18th from the lawyers of Evan Gershkovich, the jailed Wall Street Journal reporter who was detained last week and accused of spying. The Wall Street Journal vehemently denies the allegation, and its lawyers are challenging Gershkovich's detention. A spokeswoman for the Moscow court said that by law, its final decision must be communicated in public, but that the proceedings can take place behind closed doors. Today, U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the U.S. Embassy in Moscow has not yet been granted consular access to Gershkovich. Meanwhile, Gershkovich has been awarded the National Press Club's highest honor for press freedom, with the club citing his dedication and courage in reporting from Russia since 2017. Reporter Aaron Aylworth has more on the John Aubuchon Award for Press Freedom.
So this award is the National Press Club's highest honor for press freedom, and they are giving it to Evan because of his reporting in Russia, and they are specifically designating it now in part because of his detainment, and they feel like this recognition will help draw attention to his case and support the efforts to get him released.
The honor is not typically given out until the end of the year. Previous honorees have included another journal reporter, Daniel Pearl, who was abducted and killed while reporting in Pakistan in 2002. He was given the honor posthumously. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected an emergency request from the state of West Virginia that sought to ban a 12-year-old transgender girl from competing on her middle school's girls' track team. It is the first case involving transgender athletes to reach the nation's highest court. Litigation over state law will continue in lower courts. In April of 2021, West Virginia's legislature passed the law restricting participation in public school girls' teams to students designated female at birth, citing concerns that transgender girls and women could dominate in female competition categories. Nearly 20 U.S. states have now passed laws restricting transgender girls from participating in female event categories. The Biden administration is also stepping into the debate with a proposal to prohibit wholesale bans on transgender athletes, but allow schools the flexibility to exclude them from some events if needed to maintain a level playing field. The new guidelines are an attempt to clarify how Title IX regulations that ensure equal access to education should apply to transgender athletes in college and K-12 sports. Turning to financial news, the Internal Revenue Service has unveiled its strategic plan for revamping the agency amid opposition from Republicans. Our tax policy reporter Richard Rubin says the IRS plans to spend $80 billion provided by Congress through last year's Inflation Reduction Act to improve service and beef up audit enforcement.
For service, the idea is to have it be much more digital so that you could go onto an online IRS account and respond to a notice. And for enforcement, the idea is really to go after high-income people. The IRS has lost thousands of revenue agents, people who do complex audits over the past decade or so, and they're trying to hire people back to go increase audit rates on high-income households, large partnerships, and big corporations.
The beefed-up audits are a point of contention with Republicans who didn't support the law, claiming the IRS would use the money to go after American families and small businesses. They voted to claw back much of the $80 billion shortly after the start of the new Congress. That bill is not expected to pass the Democratic Senate. In a new report, the Treasury Department said that decentralized cryptocurrency markets are a threat to U.S. national security and called for greater oversight and enforcement against money laundering. Among its recommendations, the Treasury Department said the federal government needs to bolster its existing supervision and enforcement of the market by requiring platforms to adhere to the same anti-money laundering rules that banks and other financial institutions must follow. And turning to international news, in one of the biggest such attacks in years, dozens of rockets were fired into northern Israel from Lebanon today. Most of the rockets were shot down by aerial defense or landed in open areas. The Israeli army said Palestinian armed groups, likely Hamas or Islamic Jihad, were behind the rocket fire. The Lebanese militant group Hezbollah, a U.S.-designated terrorist group, did not directly comment on the rocket fire. The attack sparked fears of a broader conflict between Israel and its neighbors. Tensions have run high over the past 2 days after Israeli police raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex in Jerusalem, detaining hundreds of people. The holy site, a tinderbox for Israeli-Arab tensions, is sacred to both Muslims and Jews. Coming up, why big energy companies are rethinking their investments in natural gas infrastructure.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
How do you heat your home? How about cooking food? For many Americans, the answer is natural gas. But there is a debate going on right now among regulators about the role of fossil fuels in the home, and that's putting power companies under pressure. We've learned that as a result, two of the nation's largest utility companies, National Grid and Dominion Energy, are weighing potential sales of their natural gas pipeline networks. So what could that mean for you and the future of our energy sources? Joining me now to explain is reporter Catherine Blunt, who covers renewables and utilities for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start with this debate. Why are regulators talking about the future of natural gas in U.S. homes right now? What's fueling, pardon the pun, the attention to fossil fuels at this moment?
Well, the primary concern is climate change. There's been a number of efforts, starting with some local efforts among cities and towns across the country, and also some state-level efforts as well, to really begin to accelerate the push to electrify functions in your home that are maybe powered by gas. And that would look like replacing a gas-fired range with an induction stove or replacing a gas-fired furnace with a heat pump. And as a result, it raises real questions about the extent to which networks of pipelines needed to serve homes and businesses will be used in the future as this trend accelerates.
Right. And to that point, what are National Grid and Dominion now considering?
So there's talks of potential sales of parts of their networks. And each company faces slightly different circumstances. So we understand that National Grid may be considering some sort of sale, and it may look like selling a minority stake in part of its gas distribution business serving the Northeast. It supplies gas or electricity to customers in Massachusetts and New York. And those states are becoming quite aggressive in their efforts to phase out fossil fuels across the board. And part of that does look like allowing for greater electrification among homes and businesses. And it may be part of the company's strategic plan to shift more of its focus on the electricity side of the business as a result. With Dominion, the company is considering selling the companies that distribute natural gas in North Carolina, Ohio, and parts of the West. Faces slightly different circumstances because there isn't quite the same amount of momentum there in the push toward greater electrification. But really, this company right now is thinking, where do we want to focus our efforts long term? What's the best move strategically? And it's investing heavily in renewables and other things related to electrification and the increase in electricity demand expected to come from that.
So what would this mean for consumers? Does the infrastructure exist for those alternatives, including electrification?
It's understood that the grid needs to become bigger and stronger, so to speak, to support not only the electrification of the home or the business, but also the adoption of electric vehicles. That's, of course, been another big push. So utility companies across the country are trying to determine what sorts of investments are needed to make sure that that infrastructure is robust enough to support the transition.
And what else would it mean for the business of these power companies? How would that change what they're doing right now? And what would the shift kind of practically mean for them?
Right. So, I mean, if you don't have to spend quite as much money maintaining the gas distribution network, it frees up more money to invest in the electric grid or to invest in other things, whether it be renewable energy or potentially the production of hydrogen, which has been touted as a cleaner fuel that can be used potentially in place of natural gas, and it doesn't emit carbon when it's burned. There's a lot of experimentation going on with that right now. So I think, you know, the ultimate question for both of these companies as they consider whether to move forward with this or not is, how does this allow us to invest more strategically in things that may be more profitable in the long run?
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Catherine Blunt. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, if you've ever circled the blocks over and over in search of parking, you may be surprised to hear this, but America actually has too many parking spaces. So many that developers and urban planners are now thinking about ways to repurpose it. You may be wondering just how that could be if, like me, you live in a big city and you're looking for a free space to park your car. I'll let my colleague, economics reporter David Harrison, explain that part.
Oh, there's not enough parking. I can't find enough parking. Well, yes, there's not enough parking at the price I want to pay for it, right? If you want to pay for it on the street and you want to put a couple quarters in the meter, then no, there's not enough parking. But if you want to actually pay what that land is worth, right? But the actual true cost of parking your car, of using, you know, whatever square feet to store your car in Manhattan, then yeah, that's right. There isn't enough parking at the price that you want to pay for it.
So there's no official tally here, but Donald Shoup, an urban planner at the University of California, Los Angeles, estimates that we have between 700 million and 2 billion spaces in the U.S., and that's at least 2.5 spots for every registered vehicle. The problem is, much of it is going unused. Real estate firm Colliers International found that downtown parking garages in most major cities in the U.S. and Canada have at least 20% vacancy during weekdays and on weekends during special events. Here's David again to explain how developers are now looking at all of that unused space.
That's really valuable land. Some developers thinking, you know, I could make a lot more money on this land by building condos or apartments instead of keeping it as a parking garage. So some cities are kind of encouraging that redevelopment. Like in Philadelphia, you know, they have a rather high tax on parking operators. And, you know, I think at least implicitly part of the idea behind that is to get them to sell their parking garages to other uses to create sort of housing at a time when housing is very short. You know, we've had all these stories about housing costs being really high and a housing shortage across the country. This could be a way to just to help solve that by sort of converting parking garages and parking lots into housing.
Developers say they hope this will reduce construction costs, keep rent steady, ease congestion, yes, from all that block circling we talked about earlier, and revitalize cities. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.